Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 4, Text 21. And it looks like I'm the only one who's got the verse. So I'm just going to plow ahead here. And if they get it up there, great, we'll chant it. If not, I'll just...
Looks like I'm getting closer.
Well, I'll start. Tasmat padre svatanayan. That was pretty good. Try it again. Tasmat padre svatanayan. Maya vyap. Paditan api. Maya vyapaditan api. Manuso chayata sarva. Manuso chayata sarva. Swakritam vindate vasa. Swakritam vindate vasa. Tasmad badre svatanayan. Maya vyapaditan api. Manuso chayata sarva. Swakritam vindate vasa. Okay. Vaishnavis. Therefore, Bhadre, my dear sister, all auspiciousness unto you. Svatanayan, for your own sons. Maya, by me. Vyapaditan, unfortunately killed. Api, although. Ma anusocha, do not be aggrieved. Yataha, because. Sarva, everyone. Swakritam, the fruit of results of one's own deeds. Vindate, suffers or enjoys. Avasa, under the control of providence. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. Purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Chapter 5, Text 54, Yastvendra Gopam Atavendra Mahosvakarma Bandhanurupa Pala Bhajanam Attunoti Karmani Nidvrahati Kintu Chabakti Bhajam Govindam Adipurisham Tamaham Bhajami. Everyone, beginning from the small insect known as Indra Gopa, up to Indra, the king of the heavenly planets, is obliged to undergo the results of his fruitive activities. We may superficially see that one is suffering or enjoying because of some external causes, but the real cause is one's own fruitive activities. Even when someone kills someone else, it is to be understood that the person who was killed met the fruitive results of his own work and that the man who killed him acted as the agent of material nature. Thus Kamsa begged Devaki's pardon by analyzing the matter deeply. He was not the cause of the death of Devaki's sons. Rather, this was their own destiny. Under the circumstances, Devaki should excuse Kamsa and forget his past deeds without lamentation. Kamsa admitted his own fault, but whatever he had done was under the... Kamsa admitted his own fault. But whatever he had done was under the control of providence. Kamsa might have been the immediate cause for the death of Devaki's sons, but the remote cause was their past deeds. This was an actual fact. Om Aginata Mananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So, Kamsa is trying to get himself out of the mess he's got himself into. He, just a few minutes previous to this, he's taken the, despite the pleas of Devaki, you know, he took the baby child, the female child, who she was begging, please, you know, let me just have this female child. You're not destined to be killed by a female child. You're destined to become by a male child. So you have nothing to fear from this child. So please, let me keep this child as your gift. And Kamsa cruelly and whatever, just cruelly and harshly, he just grabbed that child anyway, and he chastised her, and he took the child, and he attempted to smash her, you know, the female child on the floor there, but the child worked out, it was Yoga Maya Subhadra, and Durga flew out of his hands up into the sky, and, you know, identified, revealed herself, hey, I'm Durga, you fool, Kamsa. You can't kill me. And actually, the child who's going to kill you has already been born somewhere else, and that's going to happen, so you're a fool. Anyway, so the point is this, that here, you know, it's sounding as if Kamsa is very genuinely repentant or regretful. We're certainly regretful, but for what reason? It's doubtful that it's genuine remorse, because just seconds before that, he was ready to, you know, cruelly and inhumanely kill this, you know, the female child, which logically was not going to be the cause of his death. So he's basically, Kamsa's sort of, he's backpedaling, you know, he's understood. His psychology is complex. You know, there might be a slight element here of, you know, remorse, but how genuine it is questionable. Mostly it's probably fear-based, you know, 90% fear-based. He's understood. I'm in a mess, you know. I've attempted to kill this child, this little baby girl. It works out that's Goddess Durga. Goddess Durga is who I worship. I think as mentioned previously that Kamsa worshiped Goddess Durga. So he understands that Durga is, you know, is much more powerful than him. And you know, he didn't whip out his sword and attempt to attack Durga or anything like that. He just, what do I do now? So he's trying to talk his way out of it, basically. He's using the philosophy, but he's just rationalizing. He's trying to just using the philosophy to rationalize his atrocious behavior, his atrocious demoniac behavior here. That's what's going on. And so, and he presents various points. Previously, he's already mentioned that, well, I can't really be, please don't hold me fully responsible, because I was misled. You know, I heard this prophecy, you know, the omen, the voice from the sky saying I'd be killed by the eighth child, and I was acting on the basis of that. He said, it appears that it's not only in human society that there's lying propaganda. Apparently, there's lying propaganda even in the, you know, the realms of the devas and like that. He presents that as an argument. Then he presents the, this is another one of his points. He's presenting that actually it might seem like I'm was responsible for the death of your six previous children, but they were destined, you know, by karma, their own karma. They were just suffering the reactions of their own past sinful activities, and I was just being used as an instrument to deliver their karma to them. And that's, Prabhupada says, that's correct. You know, philosophically, that's correct. So, you know, it's interesting to note also how well, as Judah Karma pointed out in his class yesterday, you know, how well even these demons know the philosophy. Kamsa understood that point. You know, it's a subtle philosophical point. And then he goes on to explain that, and basically, he appeals to them, as he did in yesterday's verse and today's verse and a couple of verses coming, that so please try to, you know, view this whole thing, what's happened, from a very enlightened philosophical perspective, and forgive me, you know. And then he did a good job of acting very sorry, you know, very apologetic, and he fell down at their feet with tears in his eyes and, you know, begging their forgiveness. So apparently, you know, he also understood the point that, well, you know, maybe possibly these are great souls, and, you know, I don't want to have the additional problem of having offended these great souls. So he's just, you know, he's trying to cover his tracks here in every which way he possibly can. So, yeah, so as I said, the psychology is complex. I mean, one part of us says, like, how could he, you know, look who's talking. How can, you know, Kamsa's his biggest deal, and all of a sudden he's talking in this high philosophy, you know, explaining this, like, this today's point, and asking him to, you know, appealing to Devaki and Vasudev to be very, to perceive things from a very enlightened philosophical perspective and excuse him. Look who's talking. such an atrocious, he's behaving so demonically up to this point, but anyway. But, that's the nature of the thing. He's trapped in the same situation, really, that pretty much every conditioned soul is trapped in that. It's obviously that Kamsa, Hiranyakasipu, other demons, we get throughout the Bhagavatam, we hear other, they know the philosophy. They know the philosophy. They have the intelligence. They actually understand the philosophy, but it's acting upon it. That's the difficulty. And that's the challenge. That's the challenge that every conditioned soul in this universe faces. Whether they're going to, to what degree, not whether or not, because it's generally never black and white, it's shades of gray. It's just to what degree, to what extent am I going to act upon what I know with my intelligence is the right thing to do, and to what extent am I going to make compromises and act according to what I know is not the right thing to do, but is what is more attractive to my mind. And that's the challenge that faces every conditioned soul. And Prabhupada kind of refers to this in Bhagavad Gita chapter 16, text 6. He points out in one purport, he says, one who does not follow the regulative principles as they are laid down in the scriptures and who acts according to his whims is called demoniac or asuric. He goes, there is no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of the scriptures. It is mentioned in the Vedic literature that both the demigods and the demons are born of the Prajapati. The only difference is that one class obeys Vedic injunctions and the other does not. So, that's it. Real clear. It's, if you obey the Vedic injunctions, then you're, divine. You're not dumb. But if you don't, you're demoniac. It's just a question of what you want to do. You see? So everybody's faced with that, has that choice. And, if you make the choice to obey the Vedic injunctions, you're asura or, a deva, godly. And if you don't, you're a demoniac. So Kamsa is struggling with that, Generally, he loses the struggle. On the whole, he loses the struggle. He basically acts like a demon. But at the moment, simply because Durga appeared in person, and it's like, what's that, Smarsana, that crematorium. They say, everybody, when they go to a funeral, they become very renounced for a few minutes or hours. So it's kind of like that. It's right at this moment, Durga just appeared, and he's feeling, I better behave myself and get my act together. But it's going to wear off very quickly, because basically as soon as he goes back and the next day he meets with his ministers and they talk him back out of it again. He described to him everything that happened up till this point here, and they just told him, they presented some different points, and they talked him out of his whole determination to allow Devaki and Vasudev to be free and not persecute kill the children and persecute the Brahmins and the cows and etc. like that. He just reverted back to his old demoniac self with the help of a little quote-unquote good association. So, so it's hard. It's hard. Actually, here's another interesting sentence that throws a little bit more light on the subject, because, Prabhupada's here, if I just read you that, those few sentences from that one purport, you might think that, it's very fair. The Vedic injunctions are there, and you got a choice. If you follow them, you're divine. If you don't, you're demoniac. But here's another interesting point that we have to add into the mix here. In the previous two previous verses and purport, Prabhupada says, referring to the demons, he says, They do everything whimsically according to their own desire, and they do not recognize any authority. These demoniac qualities are taken on by them from the beginning of their bodies, in the wombs of their mothers. And as they grow, they manifest all these inauspicious qualities. See? So, I mean, if you just hear that in isolation, you might think that, well, you know, it is black and white. If you're born a demon, you can act like a demon. You see, you're taking on these qualities from the beginning of your body in the womb of your mother, and as you grow, you're going to manifest these inauspicious qualities. It doesn't, you know, that's it. It's, you know, it's set in stone, so to speak. If you're born into a demoniac mother, you're going to have the demoniac qualities, and they're going to manifest as you mature. But putting these two together, the way I understand it is that it's a force. Your karma, it's an influence, but it's not an absolute force. It's not an absolute force. It's not that somebody who's born in a demoniac family to demoniac parents, say, yeah, they are going to take on those qualities from the very beginning of their bodies in the wombs of their mothers. That's a fact, right? And they, as they grow, they will manifest all these inauspicious qualities, right? And that's going to be a very, a very powerful influence in how the kind of person they become, but it's not an absolute force. If it was an absolute force, right, if there was no question of somebody who's born a demon being anything other than a demon, then what would be the meaning of Krishna's statement, you know, where he says, Daivahi eshi gunamayi mamamaya dirachaya mameviye papajante mayami tam tarantite, that this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is insurmountable. But it doesn't stop there. He doesn't just say that. He says, but one who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond them. You see? So in other words, it's an influence. It's not an absolute force. If there is a way out, so to speak, if one surrenders to Krishna, then one can, despite being born in demoniac womb and having these demoniac qualities from birth and having them manifest as one matures, one can get out of that by surrendering to Krishna. If that wasn't the case, why would Krishna say that? What would be the point of the Sankirtan movement? There'd be no point, right, in this whole Sankirtan movement if it wasn't possible to overcome this, these demoniac tendencies. It's another word. Tendencies, influence. It's a tendency. It's not an absolute force. So that's significant. It's significant, for us to realize, to meditate on that, because to greater or lesser degrees we're in that situation. Many of us, anyway, not all of us. We're coming from these, mostly people born in the West are coming from demoniac background, and it's hopeful. It's encouraging to understand, it's there. I have those tendencies, that influence is there, but it's not like it's an absolute force. I don't have to remain a demon. If I surrender to Krishna, if I surrender to the instructions of the spiritual master, I can become a devotee. It's possible. And that's the whole purpose of this Sankirtan movement. As I said, otherwise, why would Prabhupada have bothered, So that's there. And also, it's an important thing to remember, for ourselves, to encourage ourselves, and also to encourage ourselves about ourselves, and to encourage ourselves about the prospects of the hope of successfully spreading the Sankirtan movement. We have to remind ourselves that anybody can become a devotee. Everybody ultimately is a devotee. There's that verse, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sabu Kabenaya Shravanadi Sutta Chitta Kauru Daya, that pure love for Krishna is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity, and it has to be awakened by the process of Shravanadi Sutta, hearing and chanting, coming in contact with the devotee, hearing, getting a book, that's hearing and chanting, reading a book. Then you're hearing and chanting. People get a book and read it, they're hearing and chanting. They're coming in contact with the pure devotee. Their Krishna consciousness can become awakened like that. So, they're inherently or intrinsically devotees, and it just has to be, have to get that good fortune. So that's an important point. So, we have a big responsibility. It's like, because it's, you know, this, I mean, I was just finished reading that book by Bob Maharaj, Ocean of Mercy. And at one point he was asking Prabhupada, you know, he says, Maya is so strong, how can I stay free from, you know, falling into Maya? And Prabhupada said, the secret of success is association. You know, to stay in the association of the devotees. And then, and a later date, that it came up twice. He asked him, but, you know, sometimes I have to go do something that requires I'm out of the physical association of the devotees. And then Prabhupada further explained to him that association just doesn't mean being in the physical proximity with other devotees. It means, you know, meditating on the instructions of the spiritual master. That's also association. And actually, that's Prabhupada on various occasions indicated that was a more significant, a more important way of learning how to associate like that. And there's vapu as opposed to vani. You know, when the opportunity for vapu is there, you know, when the opportunity to serve the body of the spiritual master is there, or to serve the devotees is there, that should be taken advantage of. And in the absence of that, or simultaneously, even in the presence of that, one should, you know, cultivate or learn the art of taking shelter of the vani, the instruction of the spiritual master. And that's, of the two, Prabhupada considered the latter more important. You know, learning how to just meditate on the and execute the instruction of the spiritual master. So, it's a very important thing for us to do. And as I said, we have a big responsibility, because everybody's kind of caught in that dilemma, you know. To the point where, here's an interesting example of how much you can be caught in that dilemma. Dhritarashtra, I couldn't find the reference, you know, I just couldn't remember clearly enough, get some key words to look it up, but I definitely remember this story or this point, that Dhritarashtra, there's one point where he acknowledges that he understands, he knows Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know. There's one. I think it's in the Bhagavatam. Or definitely it's in the Mahabharata. He acknowledges. He admits. I know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know that, you know, what's going to happen. The outcome of this battle is me. All my sons are going to get killed. And but I can't. I'm so attached. I just can't give up that attachment. Right? Does anybody else remember this? Yeah. Okay. It's correct then. Philosophically, it's correct. I said I couldn't find it. But he kind of knew the whole thing. He knew Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knew it was going to be, the outcome he was hoping for was not going to happen. But out of attachment, he just couldn't bring himself to do anything other than what he was going to do, you know, which was just support his son, Duryodhana, and kind of whatever. So, we have to. So that's how powerful Maya could be. Despite that, you know, the fact that he actually had that, all that gyan, but zero vigyan. So we have to, try to share with other people this good fortune. And help them just kind of have the opportunity at least to make the right choice. Because at this point, in one sense, even demons like Kamsa, Hiranyakasipu are better situated than your average kind of human being in the Kali Yuga, because they have no knowledge. You know, there's no, 99.9% of the population, they're in ignorance of Vedic injunctions. So, you know, Prabhupada, on many occasions, would refer to human beings today as dvipada pasu, two-legged animals, because they don't know. You know, they don't know. Somebody wanted to do the right thing, had some sort of sudden inspiration, let me do the right thing with my life. They don't have the knowledge to do it. They don't have a clue how to act properly. As Prabhupada said, the demons they don't know what is to be done and what is not to be done. So, Whereas at least the demons in the old days at least knew if they, you know, for some reason decided, well, let me do the right thing. At least, you know, Kamsa had knowledge of, you know, Vedic philosophy, Hiranyakasipu, etc., you know. But people today, they don't. So that's where we come into the picture. We have to, you know, give them the opportunity to come in contact with this philosophy through the books, through the festivals, through, you know, the temple, prasadam distribution, whatever, this, you know, some way or another. So that at least they have that opportunity to, you know, to properly use their free will. You know, when they decide, if they do decide to, you know, try to turn towards becoming a devotee, they, at least they have something to do it with. You know, they have some knowledge. And that's what's, you know, that's what's really. That's an important thing for, you know, it's vital for the conditioned souls. It's even an important thing, a good meditation for us is just to be concerned about, you know, executing our duty, doing the right thing. I was just kind of, as I was driving home yesterday, I was going, you know, coming back from visiting my mother, actually. And I was kind of thinking, well, you know, it would be nice to be blissful and ecstatic all the time. That would be nice. It would be nice to be, you know, like really realized and be able to, you know, brilliantly present the philosophy. And, that would be nice. But minimally, what I want to do is just behave properly. In other words, if you just behave properly, you know, if you're able to understand what is your duty, and you execute it, you're safe. You know, you're okay. I mean, it's like, it's just like, you know, give a mundane example. Sure, anybody would like to have a Rolls Royce. I mean, I'd like to be really well-built and good-looking and intelligent and wealthy. And but, okay, at least if I'm healthy, I feel, well, that's something. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing in Krishna consciousness. It would be nice to be, you know, blissful and ecstatic, or, you know, a brilliant devotee who can know so many shlokas and present the philosophy so incredibly, you know. But minimally, we just want to understand what is our duty and execute it. And that way, we're safe. Just like when you go to school, you know, it's what's more important? Is it more important that you're having a really good time when you say, like in high school or college, or that you're getting, you know, you're studying your stuff and you're getting good grades? Obviously, the latter. So in the same time, in the same way, in Krishna consciousness, more important, it'd be nice to have a good time, but it'd be nice to have both. It'd be nice to, you know, get really good grades and have a really good time. But if you have to choose between the two, obviously it's more important to get the good grades. So same thing in Krishna consciousness. More important than whether we're enjoying ourselves, you know, which is nothing wrong with that. It'd be nice. But more important than that is, are we doing the right thing? And, you know, are we understanding what is it that, you know, the instructions of the spiritual master are, what he wants us to do, and doing that. And if we are, then we're in good shape. You know, then we're in good shape. Because everything we do during this lifetime, especially as devotees, well, for everybody, but, you know, especially devotees, everything we do is being observed and evaluated. And at the time of death, we will be hopefully not punished, but, you know, rewarded or dealt with accordingly based upon our, you know, our activities. Our performance is being observed and evaluated. So, yeah, very important that we always be conscious of that and just strive to, you know, be in voluntary compliance with what we've learned, you know, and that's what's really important, and that's because Krishna reciprocates with that. That's actually why this community is New Dwarka is so successful, because there's like a critical mass or a body, a core of devotees. That's the word I was looking for. A core of devotees who are serious about following Prabhupada's instructions. They don't have to be whipped or beaten or anything like that. You know, it's just It seems like Rath Yatra happens in the last few years. Swas doesn't even hardly say anything. It just, there's so many devotees, you know, like there's this core, even on a regular daily basis of devotees, they've understood this principle that just follow the instructions of the spiritual master. They've, you know, and taken it to heart. Another way of describing that is service attitude. And Krishna reciprocates with that service attitude. He reciprocates with that service attitude on a communal level, and that's my understanding for why New Dwarka is successful. Because to a satisfactory enough extent, Prabhupada's, or Lord Chaitanya, Krishna, Rukmini Dwarkadish are satisfied with the service attitude of the members of this community. And you know, for that reason, it's as successful as it is. Of course, there's always room for improvement, but you know, the success that this community is enjoying is because of that. Because there's a core of devotees that have a good service attitude. And on the same thing on an individual basis as well. Our success will be determined by how good a service attitude we had. That's what Krishna is reciprocating with. That's what the spiritual master is reciprocating with, our service attitude. So, anyway, I'll stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? Satchinarayan Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. Just a clarification, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you were saying that the offspring of the demons have the tendency to be demoniac themselves, I am sure you were referring to in many cases, or most cases, but not all cases, because out of respect for the great Mahajan Prahlad Maharaj, I don't believe he had that tendency for even an instant.
Yeah, that's
or maybe I'm wrong. I don't think I am. Go ahead.
I would say that he was an exception. You know, I think that what's described here in those sentences I read is the general thing that happens, and he would be considered an exception.
Jai.
Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah. No, not at all. Oh, yeah.
So, the power of Krishna and his pure devotees is far greater than any demoniac force. I was just thinking, like...
Well, let me interrupt just for a second. But it wasn't that he was transformed by Narada Muni. He was, you know. But if you remember, in that pastime, the demigods were coming. You know, Hiranyakasipu had fled, and they captured his wife, and they were going to kill... I think they were going to kill her. Yeah, if I remember correctly. They were going to kill her. And then Narada Muni appeared on the scene and told them, no, what are you doing? And he said, well, that's Hiranyakasipu's wife. She's pregnant with his seed. So he's going to be a big demon like his father. So we want to kill him now before, you know, he gets out of control here. And Narada Muni told them, no, he's not. There's not a demon in there. It's a Mahabhagavat. So even before Narada Muni had an opportunity to preach to him, you know, because after the demigods cooperated and they handed his mother over to Narada Muni, and she stayed with him in his ashram, and he preached to her, and he heard. His mother forgot everything, and he remembered everything. But so even before that, though, Narada Muni was, you know, telling the demigods that, no, don't touch it. You know, don't do that. He's a pure devotee. So, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you for a nice class, too. I was thinking, you know, one of the qualities of devotees, as in their spiritual body, full of chit or knowledge, they're all-knowing. So Narada Muni perhaps knows how the pastime unfolds or sees how things are working in the future. I just wanted to talk about this idea of providence and our karma and how things are fixed up in this life, at least on the material level, not on the spiritual level. Because Prahlad Maharaj makes the same point when he instructs his classmates about how, just like bad things, I'm paraphrasing, just like bad things happen automatically, good things also happen automatically. Just kind of reflecting on my own life, because I, you know, going to college and trying to change destiny, adjust things in the material world, how the folly of that is, because everybody is put in a situation according to their destiny, and really the only adjustment I can really make is my spiritual adjustment. Whatever is going to happen is on the material level is determined by my karma. Of course, Krishna, if you take the spiritual path, Krishna can adjust things in that way. So that's and also just even though knowing that, how forgetful I can become, conditioned by material nature. Just like you're mentioning Dhritarashtra, he knows Krishna's God, and just like I know Krishna's instructions are in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's standing here over here, but due to the influence of material nature and my association with it, I get conditioned.
Yeah, it's an easy point to understand intellectually. You don't have to try to get a flu or something like that, disease or things come of its own accord, the good things will come of its own accord. Therefore, the conclusion is, therefore, don't waste your time trying to ward off distress or seek out material happiness, because they're going to come of their own accord. And therefore, what should you do? Just engage in devotional service. Those things are going to happen automatically. The distress is going to come automatically. The happiness is going to come automatically. So don't waste your time trying to get ward off the distress or get the happiness. Just let it, what's ever going to come, come, because that's what's going to happen anyway, and then just fully engage in devotional service. There's that verse, Dharma Svanustita Pumsan Viksvakshenu Katashiyat Nadpadayat Yadhiratim Shrama Evihi Kevalam, that occupational duties performed by men are so much useless labor, shrama avi kevalam, if they do not awake, provoke an attraction for hearing the messages of Vasudev. In other words, basically it's saying that anything you do that isn't like helping you advance in devotional service is just, you're wasting your time. So as I said, it's an easy point to understand intellectually, but it's a really tough one to put into practice in our life. I mean, everybody who's a devotee knows that, right? But who among us is 100% engaged in devotional service? It's something. It's like a work in progress. It's something you really have to work on throughout your entire life to become more and more just okay. Don't chase after the happiness. Don't try to ward off the distress. Let me just try to focus and concentrate on my devotional service. It's easier said than done. That's another one of the challenges that we're all faced with throughout our entire lives until we become pure devotees. Anybody else have any last fucked avatar?
Thanks for your party. Wonderful class. On that point that we were talking about before, did Srila Prabhupada in the purport, did he mention the demoniac tendencies were coming from the mother? Because it seems that in all the experiences that I can think of, all the instances given in the Bhagavatam, it seems like that the demoniac quality must be coming from the mother, because, for instance, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they were born from the great sage Kashyapa, who also, he fathered all the demigods with another wife.
Yeah, it's a good point. I understand what you're saying. So, yes, probably something that requires to be researched, studied a little bit, looked at a little bit more carefully. But I think that the conclusion that we've come to, even after we did that, would be similar or the same as the conclusion I made, which is that it's not an absolute force. It's an influence. It's an influence. It's not an absolute force. Whether you take on those qualities because, you're born in the womb of a demoniac mother, or for some other reason, like in the case of Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, they're born of divine parents, but they made some mistake and, they had sex life at the wrong time, and for that reason, these demoniac personalities are born. Whatever the reason is that you're born as a demon, you're not stuck. A demon can become a devotee. That's the bottom line. Whether you're born a demon because your mother was a demon, or you're born a demon because whatever reason, anybody can become a devotee. That possibility is there. Okay, so
yes,
we'll stop
you.
There.
That's a great point.
Thank you. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Oh, yeah, it's okay. I didn't wait that long. I Super Soul told me exactly what was going on.
What did he tell you?
He told me. You got distracted and, blah, blah, blah. I just knew that was it. So I waited about...